Welcome to the Sunshine Economy, the power of price, healthcare, and health costs in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Open enrollment for the second year of the Affordable Care Act is underway. Unlike last year, this year's sign-up period through the website healthcare.gov has not been marked by an unprepared system and technological meltdown of the website, at least so far. The early days of this enrollment period for people to get health insurance or face the risk of a fine may be without the collapse of the website, but the controversy over the mandated health care insurance remains. The Affordable Care Act has brought millions of Americans into what's called the risk pool. These are people who had previously not had health insurance, but now do. It doesn't mean they didn't have health care. Often they did. Only they paid cash for their health care or got it on a credit plan or received charity care. They didn't pay at all. They've become part of the 46% of Floridians with private health insurance, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, all of whom navigate the complex, confusing, and sometimes confounding environment of health care costs. In September, WLRN, along with its partner, the Miami Herald, published The Power of Price, a series exploring the secrecy and cost of health care in South Florida. We reported on just how difficult it is for a patient to understand his or her health bill, let alone learn what the real costs are before or after receiving treatment. There's a maze of contracted rates, negotiated discounts, explanation of benefits, deductibles, premiums, copays.
Nobody can stand in front of me, and myself included, and defend health care costs in the United States. The health care costs in the United States are way too high.
That's Brian Keeley. He runs a medical system that delivers more than $2 billion worth of health care to this community each year. Baptist Health South Florida is one of the largest hospital systems in the state, with more than 1,700 beds. It's one of the largest nonprofit hospital operators in Florida, and Keeley has worked for it for more than 30 years. The Sunshine Economy features today an in-depth interview with the Baptist Health CEO. Baptist's size gives it a unique window into health care in this community, especially the cost of that care. Later on this hour, you will hear Brian Keeley of Baptist Health say his health system has not raised prices in a few years.
We have not had a price increase in 3 years. We have not increased any of our prices, which is really demonstrable, I think, in terms of what's going on.
But while the rate of increase of health care costs has slowed dramatically in recent years overall, medical costs continue rising at least twice as fast as everything else in terms of inflation. Price transparency is a big buzz phrase in healthcare. Last month, a Massachusetts law went into effect there requiring health providers and insurers to publicly publish their prices. A patient in Massachusetts is supposed to be able to call a hospital, ask how much a procedure will be, and get an answer. Patients cannot do that in Florida. Or rather, they can try, but healthcare providers are not required to provide a price, nor are insurers. Baptist Health South Florida CEO Brian Keeley points to his hospital system's pricing office as a start toward more price transparency.
The first thing we realize is we have an extremely complex, convoluted system of pricing. I would challenge anybody to tell me that they fully understand it. On our charge list, we have in excess of 100,000 different charges. When you look at the way we're reimbursed by Medicare, Medicaid, the managed care companies, everybody does it a little bit differently. So it is extremely challenging, very, very convoluted in terms of trying to explain it to people. And after challenging ourselves with this for a number of years, we opened up a pricing office many years ago. We were we were the first in South Florida to open that up to help consumers understand what's going to, you know, what is their out-of-pocket cost? How much is it going to take? Do they have to pay out of their own pocket to have a procedure or what have you. So after a couple of years of trying to figure it out, we decided we need to incorporate a standalone office that's actually open 7 days a week to help people like this because it's virtually impossible to figure it out.
What can a patient expect when they go to the pricing office at a Baptist facility?
If they come in for an elective procedure, and I say elective as opposed to an emergency procedure, they will find out exactly what they'll end up paying out of pocket based upon whatever procedure they're going to have, based upon their doctor, because many times it's physician-specific, and based upon what the details of the procedure are. Are they going to have a medical device installed? Are they going to get an expensive drug? What are they going to have, and how many are they going to have put in? It all depends on their age. It all depends on their acuity level. Are they a diabetic? Do they have cardiovascular disease? Are they over 72? That will all add to the cost and to the length of stay and what have you. So it's a very detailed process, but they'll end up with exactly what they would be paying out of pocket.
Is that the same kind of process that Baptist uses when negotiating insurance reimbursement rates, patient age, severity of cases, types of procedures, those same kind of characteristics you ask for the consumer?
Not necessarily, because in that case, you're dealing with thousands of patients. You're dealing with maybe $100,000 or something like that. So it's more averages, what have you. What's so difficult about that is everybody reimburses us differently. There's a different formula for every different organization. Now, to translate that out to people like you folks, it creates different incentives. You know, one incentive might be to increase the length of stay. My incentive might be decrease the length of stay. And I would argue that if we could have one fix, it would be to have a standardized reimbursement methodology. I think the U.S. would save billions and billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. But you've got, thousands of insurance companies out there doing it their way as opposed to some type of coordinated way.
Back to your pricing office. If someone were to come to that office who was uninsured, mm-hmm. or didn't want to use their insurance, how much negotiating power could they expect to have?
They receive a very substantial discount. In the case of people without insurance,
a discount from what?
A discount off what would people would normally pay. Nobody pays list price. I think the illusion there is that everybody comes in, there's a list price for everything. I think that's an illusion. That just doesn't happen. But I think in the case of people without insurance, we have a very, very generous charity care policy that goes up to 300% of the federal poverty level, which is actually much more generous than the local public hospitals down over here, because Baptist is a charitable not-for-profit organization. We believe strongly that we need to give back to the community, and the most profound cases down in Homestead, where we have about 40% of the population are uninsured, very low socioeconomic level. So we have a lot of those patients down over there, and of course, they don't pay anything.
Brian Keeley, Baptist Health, South Florida CEO. Joining me for the interview of Keeley was Miami Herald healthcare reporter Daniel Chang.
Brian, the central pricing office that you're referring mm-hmm. to sounds like a service that's very useful for individual mm-hmm. patients. And I was thinking about another consumer, and that would be employers, mm-hmm. who could also and perhaps use this information perhaps even more effectively than individual consumers when you talk about trying to lower their overall healthcare costs, not only for themselves or their perhaps if they are an employer, their business, but also for their employees. Mm-hmm. How do you share this type of information with employers or even legislators, as I understand, could also would also be a very useful audience for this type of information?
Well,
so I'm curious, how can they get access to this?
They're available to use it. If mm-hmm. somebody has insurance and they work for an employer, we'll give the number to the employer or to the employee. It really doesn't make any difference. I think that the people that really care about it are the employees. Now, the employers, you have to look at this thing at a much more macroeconomic level. Looking at a per diem or a DRG or a case rate or whatever it is really meaningless to anybody. I couldn't even figure it out. When I look at the total spend, the obvious spend is what's it cost to go to the hospital, the outpatient services, the physician fees, or what have you. What about the thousands of patients that aren't admitted because of our prevention and wellness or the chronic disease management? In the case of like the diabetic patients or the cardiac patients, and those patients with chronic diseases, that's a very big chunk of the overall dollar, approximately 50%. So if we can manage those patients and keep them out of the emergency departments, out of the hospitals, you're talking about millions and millions of dollars. So that's the macro spend you have to be looking at. And that's what the employers have to get involved in. Don't micro it, but macro manage it. And looking at the big picture, how we can work together to really lower healthcare costs.
For sure, wellness programs go a long way in keeping people out of the hospital, which mm-hmm. in turn saves money. To rephrase my question was, not necessarily how can an employer use the central pricing office, but how can an employer gain access to pricing data that insurers and hospitals keep protected contractually, so that the employer can understand his or her cost better, so that they can identify, for instance, who are the high-cost providers, who are the low-cost providers, how can I incentivize my employees perhaps to use lower-cost providers that could in turn save us all money. Employers currently don't have access, I think, to that data, and so I was curious, I think there are two parties that they have to work with. One of them are the providers, hospitals such as yourself and physicians, and the other one is with the insurers. And where can the employer come in and try to sort of enter that secret negotiation, that undisclosed price data, so that he can understand his or her costs better and work to try to manage those rising costs?
Well, Dan, I don't think there's any secret negotiations. I think it's done every day, and everybody does it, and the Miami Herald does it, and all manufacturers do it. Those things can continue daily. And I think with the employer, they'd be working directly with the payer, not necessarily with us, but they can go out and they can bid it out like they normally do, and they have, you know, tens or several dozen people going after their business. That's where they really need to be working, and what our involvement is really – yeah, and I think what you're seeing, and you're obviously very familiar with it, is a cost shift back to the employee right now, where they're going to be shouldered with additional cost, and that's exactly what the employer wants them to do. They want to have some skin in the game, and I'm a big believer in skin in the game. I think everybody needs to have a skin in this game. But I think that once they bid it out, and that's where the negotiations come in, they can choose payer A, B, C, D, or E, or A, B, and C. We have several of them right now. We have a high-end and a low-end one, and people choose the higher end when they're going to pay more out of pocket, and they choose the low end when they save money. And really, it's sort of a trade-off between a choice and price. And if you want to have a broader choice, you're going to end up paying more, unless you won't.
What we heard from insurance brokers, for instance, when companies come to them and say, I need to bring down the cost of health insurance for my employees that I'm providing, what we heard from the brokers is they can give them a wide menu of options. Mm-hmm. If you want no limitations on where you can go, it's going to cost you X. If you want to limit the number of places you can go and the kinds of doctors you can see and whether or not you need referrals, then you can wind up paying Y. What we heard, though, was beyond that, there was no ability to negotiate with the payer, with the insurance company, about the reimbursement rates, about the cost of providing the health care to the provider, such as Baptist. Mm-hmm. That's where that negotiation, through our reporting, identified. That's the part that remains opaque in this.
Well, I don't think it's opaque. I think that when you have large employers, not necessarily the small employers, but the large employers, many times there are direct relationships. And we have some of those internationally right now where there's a direct relationship. And I think that when you look at healthcare reform, which I think is happening big time right now, and the reason I say that is that this is the first time in the history of the United States we've had healthcare costs as low as they've been in like 50 years. This is the third year going into it. In the case of Baptist,
you mean the price increases, have slowed down.
Yeah, and the last number I heard from the Labor Department, I think it was like 3% or something like that. That's almost unheard of. I mean, in 50 years, unprecedented. So something is happening right now. And I think a lot of people are working together to really focusing on that. And I think as we go through healthcare reform right now, the way I think what's going to happen is, and what we are committed to, is working closely together with all the players, because the federal government has not been able to manage this, obviously. Single employers haven't been able to have much of an impact. Baptists, as big as we are, we haven't had any impact in terms of standardizing the payment methodologies. So I think it's going to require the major players and the major payers and the major employers to come together for the benefit of the patients, and working in concert with the providers, the hospitals and doctors, and saying, guys, we've got to figure this out ourselves, because this has been 20, 30 years, and we haven't had much relief. Now, we're very close to our employees, and we have self-insured for both our health care plans, and that's been very, very successful. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, but it's a matter of people collaboratively partnering together and sharing all the information, the pricing information, quality information, everything, finding out how can we do a better job of that.
More from our interview of Brian Keeley of Baptist Health South Florida on Power of Price, healthcare and health costs. Still to come, some big employers are talking about getting more information on how and where they're spending their medical insurance dollars.
Getting away from that fee-for-service, volume-driven approach, that's the intellectual challenge we're facing us right now. So that's the road we're going down right now.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, the power of price, healthcare and health costs. I'm Tom Hudson. We are continuing our coverage of the cost of healthcare in South Florida. In September, WLRN and the Miami Herald reported on the complexity, secrecy, and cost in healthcare. Payers, yes, that means patients, insurance companies, employers, are not on equal footing in regards to knowing their costs. Non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, govern the business relationships between health providers and their insurance payers. Those NDAs prevent the release of the negotiated rates insurance companies pay on their patients' behalf. We'll talk more about them later. As a way to hope to bend the cost curve of healthcare, or at least better control health insurance premiums, companies have partnered with their insurance companies and health providers like hospitals in new ways. Exercise discounts, dietary education, and wellness programs are designed to keep patients healthy and out of the medical system. It's a strategy that may be counterintuitive for a business that's in the business of providing healthcare. Certainly a business model built on charging for every service rendered and not a package deal. That's what the healthcare industry calls fee-for-service. It's how health providers traditionally have gotten paid by insurance companies. Daniel Chang of the Miami Herald picks up our conversation with Baptist Health South Florida CEO Brian Keeley.
If you want to make more money, you don't have to do more services. You have to save more money.
Yeah, you have to save more money, but you have to get away from fee-for-service, because if we stay on fee-for-service, I will be fired in a couple of years because we're not going to get paid for all this prevention. And that's where you have to come up with that challenge. How do we change the reimbursement methodology from fee-for-service, the more you do, the more you get paid, to value-based purchasing? Now, for the attorneys that are listening to this, how do you get away from billable hours? You know, they might be scratching their heads right now. And we're thinking of ideas like risk-shared contracting. We get the total number of dollars for a healthcare plan. Let's say it's $100 million, and we could save $10 million. Why don't we spread that, improve quality, reduce costs, and everybody participates in those savings, including the employer and including the employees, or including the consumers. That's the big picture in all that stuff. And maybe it's going to be a percentage of premium. Maybe we will take 85% of the premium, and we'll be at risk for that. And if we blow it, then we take it on the jaw. But that's what this whole risk shifting is all about. But getting away from that fee-for-service, volume-driven approach, that's the intellectual challenge we're facing us right now. So that's the road we're going down right now. And it's not going to take a year. It's going to take a multiplicity of years. But I think this is inevitable. I really believe this.
When you're looking at this holistic approach, in the meantime, you still have to operate in the market. And if a payer partner of Baptist, an insurance company, comes to you and says a major employer is negotiating a new contract with us, but they are requiring us to not have NDAs with our partners, Baptist or another hospital, how would you try to manage that kind of request?
I would manage it in the same way I just responded, in the sense that look at the total picture. Look at the total cost, including the savings from not having all these superfluous and unnecessary admissions and ED visits. But that requires a delivery system that can deliver, i.e. patients that are going to be seen when they need it. They don't have to go to the emergency department at night or on the weekends, and that's what the extended hours are all about. In the case of chronic disease patients, we're actually calling them every day, and we're contacting them, and we're going to connect them through their Apple phones and what have you. I mean, that's where the future is going to be, in telemedicine and what have you. But, you know, this is not rocket scientist for, like, diabetes. This is just compliance, keeping their weight down, eating well, keeping their meds. I mean, this is not doing CAT scans on them every day. But this is basic stuff. And if we reach out to these people, because most of them are on automatic pilot right now, if we can keep those people in our risk pool, we're responsible for them, we're going to keep them out of our hospitals and very close to their primary care doctors and their nurse educators for diabetes and what have you.
So what you're saying, though, is if the employer is requiring a disclosure of a bypass surgery at Baptist, what you're saying is we need to look at the whole picture.
The big picture.
Only, but how do you, how does that get expressed with a payer, an insurance company, or a payee, a large employer?
Well, we don't pay them on the ticket basis. Well, we'll pay you for 10, give us 25 cardiac cases, and we'll pay you 25 times X number of $1,000. We will capitate it. We will take that risk, and if that risk is 3.8% of the total premium, give us 3.8% and let us manage those patients. Let us not do surgery in those patients. Let us see if we can prevent doing surgery in those patients. We had a conference, insurance conference a couple of weeks ago, and Dr. Arthur Yankson, who's our medical director for prevention, spoke, and he made the comment that he's the least popular doctor in the room of cardiovascular surgeons because he doesn't refer anybody to them because he tries to keep them healthy, focusing on their lifestyles and hopefully, and if the lifestyles don't work, medication, what have you. That's a profound statement, mm-hmm. You know, and that's what they do in China. It's either China or Japan, where doctors are paid to keep people healthy. They don't get paid when people are sick. And that, believe it or not, is the culture we need to begin to embrace here in the United States. I mean, I, for one, have no idea what, and somebody want to come in for surgery, you can avoid it. I'm a basic coward. I don't want to go in for surgery. I'd rather pursue another course of action and pursue a healthy lifestyle, what have you. But there's so many diseases that are focusing on healthy, on lifestyles that are lifestyle dependent. And what we're doing is in our guinea pigs are 15,000 employees, myself included, I might add. So our job, keep people healthy. Keep them out of the hospitals and burn departments and treat them in the most appropriate fashion when they do go in. But in the case of diabetes and in the case of congestive heart failure, those things can be managed so much easier in the outpatient basis. But it is not rocket science. It's some real basic things like diet, exercise, taking your meds.
Sure. Is the business model at Baptist set up to capture those expenses and those savings that are out there?
It is now, in the sense we're doing it for our own employees. We're doing it internally, and I use the term guinea pigs, not in a negative sense, sure. But this is a great experiment, a great social experiment, how we can improve upon it, how we can roll that out to other major employers, mm-hmm. too. Learn from our experience, but also learn from our mistakes. I mean, we've made some mistakes, too, that we've corrected also.
Brian, if you keep people out of your hospitals, how are you going to make money?
Well, then that's where we're exploring new payment methodologies, such as risk sharing. If a major employer comes and let's say the total spend is $100 million, then that's greater than Baptist. We're the largest private employer in South Florida. You're talking about big dollars. If we budget $100 million and we can do it for $90 million, why don't we share those savings? Or conversely, if we're doing it for a Medicare Advantage plan, why don't you give us 85% of the premium dollar, and we will take the risk to take care of all the health care needs for those employees in your risk pool. Or give us 72.8%, and we'll do all the outpatient, inpatient, but we won't do the subacute care like the nursing home care or what have you.
What's the significance of those percentages that you mentioned? Any significance of...
Going back to the Affordable Care Act and what have you, The insurance companies can only charge, or a certain percentage had to be devoted to clinical services.
Right.
They can't be devoted to administrative and marketing services and profit or what have you.
So does this, under this model that you just described, Brian, does the insurance industry have a role?
The insurance industry has a role to market for sales. They have their profit built into it, except what they're doing is they're transferring the risk from themselves to a provider. And that's a negotiated risk in terms of, do you want us to give us the whole thing? Do you want us to give us just the inpatient, the outpatient component? Do they want us to do home health? What about assisted living? What about nursing home care? So you've got to slice and dice a little bit. But it's really just about who wants to bear the risk. And with the risk comes the rewards. But with the risk comes the penalties also. Mm-hmm. And if we mismanage it, it might cost us another $10 million to provide very high level of services, and that's going to come out of our hide.
Baptist Health South Florida CEO Brian Keeley speaking with the Sunshine Economy and the Miami Herald's Daniel Chang. Still to come, managing the risk of healthcare costs, but does it come at the price of price transparency?
There's never a discussion, let's increase the premiums. There's never that discussion. Now, we have not had a price increase in 3 years. We have not increased any of our prices.
This is the Sunshine Economy, the power of price, healthcare and health costs in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. In May of 2013, Mount Sinai Medical Center CEO Steve Sonnenreich and Baptist Health South Florida CEO Brian Keeley appeared on this program. Mount Sinai's Sonnenreich surprised many people and made national headlines when he made this pledge.
You've incentivized us at Mount Sinai this morning. We will post our prices relative to Blue Cross and Aetna, our contractual prices, and we'll challenge Baptist and the other systems in the community to do the same.
But no other hospital took up the challenge. And in September of this year, Sonnenreich returned to the Sunshine Economy to announce he could not make good on his pledge to make public the rates his hospital negotiates with insurance companies.
When I made the pledge, obviously I intended to post our rates. Got back to the hospital, met with our executive management team, and found out that our contracts with the various insurance companies preclude us from releasing that information.
Those contracts include NDAs, non-disclosure agreements. Those clauses keep secret the prices insurance companies and healthcare providers like Mount Sinai and Baptist Health agree upon to deliver services. They may appear on a patient's explanation of benefits as negotiated rates, the contracted rate, or the discounted price. These prices make up the bulk of the cost of healthcare for insured patients, but patients don't directly see them. Instead, patients pay their premium, their deductible, their copay. Non-disclosure agreements keep secret the money that changes hands between the insurance carrier and the healthcare provider. Daniel Chang of the Miami Herald and I asked Baptist Health CEO Brian Keeley about how his institution uses these non-disclosure agreements.
Do the non-disclosure agreements that are de facto operational mechanisms and contracts between healthcare providers and insurance companies helpful in the risk relationship, or does it continue to add to the opacity?
We've never even had a discussion on that, so it hasn't really been, I've never been involved in that. That's between probably the employer and the major companies.
Well, what about the disclosures that Baptist signs with the insurance providers, the Blue Cross Blue Shields, the Aetnas, the Humanas of the world? When you negotiate those prices together, are those under a non-disclosure agreement or not?
I don't know. I don't know if they are. I presume they are. Most of them do have something like that. But that's not unusual. When you look at the Boeings of the world, you know, they show all their pricing to all their vendors, subcontractors and vendors. Obviously, they don't. So they want to have the competitive edge. And rest assured, they're extremely competitive. And everything they do, there's never a discussion, let's increase the premiums. There's never that discussion. Now, just to reconfirm our position right now, we have not had a price increase in 3 years. We have not increased any of our prices, which is really demonstrable, I think, in terms of what's going on. I think, why are the costs going up? It's singularly, in our case, because of utilization. People are getting sicker and more procedures or what have you. But, you know, when you look at what we've been able to do in terms of our own pricing, our own cost right now, that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just doing it internally. Why don't we get other people engaged, the major employers, the major payers? And that's exactly what we're doing right now with the payers we're talking about right now. Trusted payers who want to take it to the next step. Come on, guys, let's let our guard down. Let's get in bed together and risk sharing. And we don't risk sharing is we win or lose together. And then, well, how do we divide the money up? You know the best example I can give? We're going to bake a cookie. I'm going to get the first, someone's going to bake the cookie, and they're going to determine the size. Then somebody else is going to cut it in half, and then the other person chooses what half he wants. That's what fairness is all about.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's got to be very, very transparent like that. Now, that might sound a little Pollyannish to you, gentlemen. I don't think it's Pollyannish because this has been going on for years. And now we have a real wonderful opportunity under the ACA. We recovered, you know, hopefully from the recession and everything. And right now we're saying this is a great time to reach out to people and to come together and to fix a system that is terribly broken. It is terribly broken.
I don't want to let this point get away. You mentioned you haven't increased prices in 3 years.
Yes.
Right? Are those the charges that you apply?
That's right, yeah.
If your reimbursement rates changed in 3 years?
I don't think the reimbursement rates are pretty much based upon that.
But I would bet that most consumers are seeing increases in their health insurance costs. So if it's not, for instance, the Baptists of the world that are leading to the consumers' rising healthcare costs, rising insurance premiums, why are they paying more for their health insurance now if you're not raising your prices?
Oh, Dan, I don't know. And I think You look at our rates, we flattened them the last 2 or 3 years or so, and we might have made a half of 1% or something like that, but not everything, obviously very, very marginal. I'd imagine everybody else the same way, unless there's other people getting more substantial rates. I don't know. My gut tells me it's just pure utilization, mm-hmm. and it's possibly the demographics, people getting older. I just don't think it's price inflation. I just don't think that's happening, with the exception of pharmaceuticals. The pharmaceutical costs are going up probably three times the rate of all the other cost components in healthcare. And technology, the new technology, what have you. But in terms of providers, I haven't heard anybody, you know, hospitals or doctors getting any type of, you know, substantial increases. I just I haven't heard that.
There has been a movement by some big employers to get at those negotiated prices, especially by employers that are self-insured. That means the employer takes on the risk an insurance company normally would for its own health care costs of its workers. That describes Miami-Dade County. Last March, a new committee met, the Miami-Dade Labor Healthcare Committee. Mayor Carlos Jimenez formed the group earlier this year to look at options to cut the county's $400 million health care expense as it was beginning labor talks with its unions. At the first meeting, a labor union consultant asked if the group could see what the county pays various hospitals and doctors to provide health care to county union employees. The answer? No. Those were proprietary contracts, he was told. Again, we continue our in-depth interview with Brian Keeley with Baptist Health.
First of all, we're big believers in transparency. I'm a strong supporter of transparency, as long as it's on a fair scale. You have to look at total cost. Whatever that number is, you know, millions of dollars or what have you, that needs to be held, that needs to be taken advantage of also. And you need to have an understanding of the total cost. So when you look at that, when you look at our whole area of prevention and wellness, our focal point is to save money by keeping people out of the hospitals and out of the emergency departments. In the case of the urgent care, we price our urgent care below that. And by the way, we package price that right now. So and those prices are listed as you go in the emergency departments. This whole focal point we've been talking about on this shift away from specialty care, fee-for-service to primary care, that's a big, big thing for us. Now, that is boring for most people because it's not talking about cancer, the cancer center we're building, and cardiovascular services and image-guided surgery and robotics and all that fancy schmancy stuff. But it's basic medicine the way it was practiced, you know, for many years in the United States. And it focuses on patient-centered medical care. And what that means is that we're going to have a group of collaborative doctors, this team in team approach, and everybody is going to be signed to a primary care physician. That's the big picture in all this thing, because when you look at the emergency departments, which have been very, very busy, especially with people with chronic diseases and the uninsured and everything else, terrible abuse there. I don't know what the number is, 30%. And you look at the number of admissions that result because of that, that's because of a dysfunctional system. So we're trying to correct this thing in terms of the way healthcare is going to be delivered in South Florida. Now, we can't change the world. We have a very, very, very substantial multi-million dollar initiative that'll extend at least over 5 years, maybe 10 years, to bring more primary care doctors over here. The reason we signed up West Kendall as a teaching hospital with FIU is because they have committed themselves to primary care. There's not enough of them down over here. So we want to attract, we want to keep every one of those doctors that graduates from FIU here. But we got to take care of the people in South Florida to have primary care. So when they have that, less admissions, less ED visits, less urgent care center, lower cost, keep people healthy. That's the big play for us.
Florida does effort some transparency. It has a website that folks can go to and take a look at different charges, if not necessarily reimbursement rates. But I also looked at some of the statutes that the state had passed, and they're almost all require reporting from hospitals. Mm-hmm. And none of them really require reporting from insurers. And insurers are the ones who know what they pay all the different hospitals and would be in a great position to help with transparency. You know what all the different payers pay you, but not what they're paying all the other hospitals. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, why don't insurers have any sort of statutory requirement to report?
I don't know. I can't answer for them. I don't know. It could be the same thing as, you know, why Boeing doesn't share their vending prices with everybody.
Okay.
It's probably a competitive practice that no one wants to share the information, but everybody's trying to drive that price as low as they can.
Brian Keeley, the head of Baptist Health, South Florida. Still to come, as our in-depth interview continues, just how unique and challenging the healthcare market is in South Florida.
We have a lot of for-profits down over here. We have an oversupply of specialists. We have an undersupply of primary care doctors. We're not dominated by large employers. We have a very high percentage of uninsured. We have a huge Hispanic population. We have a very high Medicare Advantage population, which is in excess of 50%.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, the power of price, healthcare and health costs in South Florida. Healthcare is changing, driven by technology, patients, and prices. All three of those forces exert unique pressures here in South Florida. Thanks to no state income tax and plenty good weather, Florida remains a magnet for retirees and others. Meantime, Florida has the third highest percentage of residents with no health insurance at all. Then add our diverse population and an almost equal number of for-profit and non-for-profit hospitals in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. Baptist Health South Florida is one of the largest nonprofit providers in Dade County. We continue our in-depth interview with CEO Brian Keeley.
Well, the rest of the world think we're the Wild West down over here because we have a lot of for-profits down over here, which we do. We have an oversupply of specialists, and we have an undersupply of primary care doctors. We have mostly mom-and-pop outfits. We're not dominated by large employers like Boston, New York, Chicago, Cleveland, what have you. So it's a very unique market. It's unique in the sense that we have a very high percentage of uninsured. We have a huge Hispanic population in excess of 60%. We have a very high Medicare Advantage population, which is in excess of 50%. And you look at the rest of the world, when they talk about Medicare, the percentage of Medicare, which could be 15 or 20%, and here we have a higher percentage. You don't count Medicare Advantage in that because Medicare Advantage is private Medicare. A lot of people don't realize when you go from Medicare Traditional or Original to Medicare Advantage, you're leaving the Medicare program going to a private. It could be a Florida Blue, could be a Humana, could be AdMed, could be anybody. It's a private. You're no longer a Medicare patient at that point in time. So those are some very substantial demographic changes. A lot of people don't pick up on. They all think it's about the same, but we in healthcare know that one market's one market. There's no market that's comparable to South Florida.
Baptist has 6 or 7 hospitals, I believe, within Miami-Dade, South Miami-Dade, and northern Monroe County. That's a huge chunk of territory to cover. And I think that has, whenever you sit down at a negotiating table with a payer, whether it's Florida Blue or Humana or AvMed or Aetna, that's something that they recognize, and certainly they bring something to the table as well, so in terms of their membership. Will the future still rely on that sort of geographic dominance? And if so, will it look the same as it does now, or will it look different? Will it be more urgent care type facilities? And since you're going to be sending fewer people to the hospitals or hopefully keeping them out of the hospitals, perhaps a de-emphasis on inpatient and hospital type procedures and admissions?
Yeah, I think that we're obviously a big player, but so is Jackson, so is the University of Miami, so is the HCA, and a lot of big players down over here. So I sort of poo-poo that comment. I think the future to me is going to be a hugely different if, in fact, we see healthcare reform. And I think we're going to see it because if I was the president of the United States in former years, if healthcare costs continue to go up 3 times the rate of inflation, I can say we can implement a single payer program real simple because at least half of the entire population will be in Medicare and Medicaid. That's an easy thing to pull off. So fear is a great motivator from my standpoint. But I think that people who see it introspectively like we do say we can make the system so much better. But getting away from fee-for-service medicine, the volume approach, and focusing on value. And then you focus on why do people have to go in the hospitals? What do they have to do with the urgent care and the emergency centers? The number one reason we hear about, and we started doing these 10 years ago, and they've been very, very successful, is people can't get into their doctors. They call them in the afternoon, can I come in? No, go to the emergency department. And then we'd say, don't go to the emergency department, go to the urgent care. We've got a couple dozen of those around that have been very, very successful. But if the patient-centered medical home concept is a viable one, which came from the Institute of Medicine, which we believe it is, and if you have like-minded doctors who really want to take care of patients, and it's a team concept where they're leveraged with nurse practitioners, master's and PhD-level nurses, and dietitians, and nutritionists, and physical therapists, and mental health counselors, and you have extended hours where they're going to 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and they're open on a Saturday, most of those patients don't have to go to the emergency department. They're not going to go to the urgent care center where they can stop and see their own doctor as opposed to going to this urgent care center over there, and they can focus on prevention and wellness and focusing on lifestyle and what have you. For the life of me, I would never want to have surgery. You know, why not focus on something and eating well and exercise, what have you? And, you know, we have a very robust preventative and prevention and wellness program. But I'm also convinced that people aren't incentivized to use it. And also, there's a huge amount of public ignorance out there. You know, for instance, on diet. We have a doctor coming down who's a preeminent specialist in the country. And if you guys remember the movie Fed Up that came out, was in the documentary about 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And the aha, and this came from the American Medical Association. After 20 years, somebody figured out, we've been on the low-fat diet for 20 years. The incidence of obesity is shot through the roof, along with diabetes. What is going wrong here? And what was wrong was that they added all the sugar and all these sugar substitutes to the meals, and everybody got fat. And it was the sugar was the basic problem over here. And I think the problem is we have to keep it real basic. You know, we're big believers in the Mediterranean diet, you know, fruits and vegetables and nuts and whole grain and what have you. But if you want to lose weight, watch the sugar and watch the carbs. But most people don't even know what a carb is. So stay away from the white stuff, the white bread, the rolls and what have you. And I've been on that for about a year and a half. I lost 15 pounds without anything. There was no effort whatsoever. But that's just basic core knowledge, but keep it simple. So it has to have a robust communication system. In our case, we actually financially incentivize all of our employees to stay healthy and maintain healthy lifestyles or what have you. But that can be profound because, you know, chronic diseases are 50% of the entire cost. And if we can save 10% of that, we save a huge amount of money. And all the unnecessary tests that are being done because they aren't evidence-based and have those protocols built into the electronic medical records and on and on and on. I mean, this is profound. So I'm excited about it because they can't get any worse. They only get better. And our focal point was, and my view is assured by our board and our chief financial officer and everybody else, is that the system is broken. You can lead, follow, or get out of the way. And we decided we're going to lead.
More to come from the Baptist Health CEO. Healthcare pricing isn't just a debate over cost. Quality counts.
We will not be the low-cost provider. We would like to be at a very competitive area, you know, around the medium or something like that. And on a quality side, we are going to lead South Florida. And I'll say that unequivocally.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, The Power of Price. I'm Tom Hudson. Our feature interview, the CEO of Baptist Health South Florida, Brian Keeley. As a longtime healthcare executive, he voices support regarding the movement toward more public available pricing, but he's careful to caution price transparency by itself will not ensure better healthcare or better healthcare decisions. Quality considerations also are important, he argues. The nonprofit independent healthcare accrediting group, the Joint Commission, this month recognized Baptist hospitals for exceeding its quality measures in a number of fields, including heart attack, heart failure, surgical care, and strokes. Several other South Florida hospitals received top performance designations for various practice areas as well. No patient would argue quality doesn't count in healthcare. It does. And in this push for more price transparency, Keeley at Baptist wants to ensure that the measure of the healthcare dollar is not solely how much it buys, but also how much value it purchases.
This whole transition from volume to value is, you know, what value? Value is the dynamic between price and quality. Every single source that we use is not-for-profit and highly credible. CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid, the Joint Commission, Commonwealth Fund, which is a not-for-profit, LeapFrog, which is not-for-profit, Consumer Reports, which is not-for-profit. It's all data that's third-party, and it's all accessible. It's all metric and what have you. And we share the information. And we used to share in absolute sense. So we got an A on LeapFrog, what have you, and everybody raised their eyebrow. That was great. It gave us a round of applause, and life went on. And we decided we wanted to be a little more transparent about that. So what we did many years ago, and we still do it today, We're very, very transparent, not only in an absolute sense, but in a relative sense. So in a relative sense, any database that is credible, that's not-for-profit, that's indisputable, that's quality-driven like the ones I just mentioned, we share the information not only for ourselves but all the other hospitals. We rank it, and we put it usually in a graphic form to make it very, very user-friendly. We compare ourselves to the local hospitals in terms of quality and patient satisfactions, and we compare ourselves to the most prestigious hospitals in the country, and we share their information. We update that usually quarterly, put it on our website, we share with everybody. So that's what people ought to be looking at, the quality, and then you look at the cost and what have you. But it's not the cost for one incident, one situation. Well, you ought to be looking at the total cost. What's it cost us overall? Because that's the total cost, and it includes the admissions, the unnecessary admissions, the unnecessary ED visits, the overuse of diagnostic services, the admissions to the emergency department hospital, and those ones that don't occur. Those are all savings over there.
I'm wondering if what are your thoughts, Brian, if you take the methodology or the philosophy of the methodology behind the quality type of transparency that you talk about and are proud of, and rightly so, mm-hmm. and apply that philosophy to cost.
Yeah.
What would you come up with?
I think at the insurance conference we had a couple of weeks ago, people asked, are we going to be the low-cost provider? And I said, no, we will not be the low-cost provider. We would like to be at a very competitive area, you know, around the medium or something like that. And on a quality side, we are going to lead South Florida. And I'll say that unequivocally. We will lead South Florida, and all those facts that we presented, you see the quality reports by now, pretty much demonstrate that. On the quality side, again, our costs are going to be higher. Number one, we have higher staffing levels. If you look at the awards we won for nursing, like the Magnet program, those require us to have higher staffing patterns. We have many more nurses that have bachelor's degrees as opposed to associate degrees. And I say that unapologetically. I think when you look at everything we do in terms of the quality, the clinical outcomes, the outcomes that actually occur, and also the patient satisfaction, one of the reasons we score so well is we've got some really great nurses, and we got more nurses. And I can't apologize for that, because we just aren't going to lower our standards. The other thing we do is we have a massive training program for the PCPs through the West Kendall facility. That costs us more. We have the most generous charity care program of any public private hospital in South Florida. Those are additional costs, but they're all community costs to the benefit of the community. It doesn't benefit everyone else except the community. The education, access to primary care, prevention, chronic disease management, great medical schools, charity care for those who can't afford it. Those patients are going to end up being taken care of by somebody, so we have an obligation to those people. So those costs are going to add to our overall level of cost, but our goal is to be very, very competitive, which is around the median, but it won't be at the lower end. So for those people that will be coming to us, it's going to be we won't be the low-cost provider, we won't be the high-cost provider, but we are going to be the high-quality provider.
Baptist Health South Florida CEO Brian Keeley on healthcare and health costs in the Sunshine Economy. You can explore the confusion, the complexity, and the cost of healthcare here in South Florida on our website, wlrn.org/price. You will find audio reports from WLRN and coverage from our partner, the Miami Herald. Special thanks to Wander Miles, our technical director for this Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.